Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanz in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Thursday, March 10, 2022. The spokesperson of the UN mission in Abyei says peacekeepers face challenges in the area.
We knew there was some tension, but we didn't expect it to take this dimension. We have tried to increase patrol in those areas and deploy in those areas.
And the governor of Western Bahar Ghazal says she faces challenges working with men in the state.
They look at women as women they cannot do. They always assume they have a bias against women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesperson of the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei says the mission has serious security challenges. Speaking to VOA from Abyei, Daniel Adekera says the Ethiopian troops participating in the mission are withdrawing and their absence will create a huge security gap that will hamper the mission's ability to deter attacks in the area. The UNISFA spokesperson says the recent attacks in the area appear to be well coordinated.
We knew there was some tension, but we didn't expect it to take this dimension. We have tried to increase patrol in those areas and deploy in those areas just to de-escalate the tension. We also had some attacks on Ngondinka from the Misriya side. This seems to be a coordinated attack. We've been engaging the community from this side of Abyei and neighboring the Misriya because the two jingles are outside our area of operation. We don't have much other than to engage the government in Chuba to try to talk to them.
UNISFA has been in the area for years, and this kind of skirmishes between the Dinka Ngok and the people from Twitch County in Warab State has never been there. But what is the reason? What are the drivers of this tribal conflict?
This is a new trend, even for us. We've never had, even the tension that seems to have been growing, we've never had it before. I would think it is politically motivated, and it has to do with a disagreement over land in terms of where the two leaders think where things on this land and they need to reclaim it. We don't know why it is coming at this time, and the timing is wrong. It seems to coincide with at the time the mission is reconfiguring and the Ethiopian troops are withdrawing. Some of the troops that are supposed to reclaim them are yet to be fully on the ground. So we don't know. We are still trying to investigate, why at all and why now.
You mentioned earlier that these attacks look like they are coordinated. Could you expound on that?
It is happening at the same time, and the trend looks the same, and we suspect it is coordinated. Of course, Dengondinka has come out to say clearly that it is a coordinated attack. But for us, we are looking at the circumstances the circumstantial evidence on the ground, which points to the fact that the timing and the nature of the attacks look the same. That's why we suspect that perhaps they are coordinated attacks.
The mandate of this mission was Chapter 7, to use force in order to deter any security threat on the people of Abyei. But again, under this mandate, several attacks took place in Abyei, and the community is pointing fingers at UNISFA, saying that UNISFA is doing very little to deter these attacks. What is your comment?
It's true that UNISFA operates under Chapter 7 of the UN Security Council Resolution. You know, no security is foolproof. And for us, sometimes, if there is time lapse between when there's a security incident and when it is reported, sometimes we get there when it is too late. The people who do this understand the terrain much more than we do. And it is not a conflict that is that is conventional. In most cases, these are hit and run people, more of what you can call a guerrilla attacks. They hit and withdraw. So by the time we go there, sometimes it's too late. Secondly, yes, Chapter 7 is there, but sometimes one has to exercise caution in order not to become part of the problem much more than the solution.
And how is the reduction of the troops affecting the mission and the mandate of the of UNISFA in Abyei?
There are gaps, because even with the initial deployment of 4,000, if we really have to deploy on the ground, you know, we cannot cover the entire area. Aside from the fact that the security has to be provided at the headquarters too, and you are talking of both Abyei and Kadugli under the JBVMM. So the remaining troops spread thinly on the ground, and at the same time, you cannot deploy in every house. You cannot deploy in every area covering what is known as the Abyei box.
All right. And how about families affected, displaced? I mean, I saw something from the UN humanitarian coordinator talking about thousands of people displaced. Is that the picture on the ground?
Not really. When this happened last Saturday, the people from Agog run to Abyei, and when the incident happened in Abyei again, they run to our premises. But what we did was that we quickly deployed in very critical areas and then increased our patrol both in Agog and in Abyei. So the same day, most people, if not all, like in Abyei, all the people returned to their houses. So we don't have a large number of displacement. In fact, even those who came from Agog are staying with families in Abyei. So in terms of humanitarian displacement, we don't have that, as a matter of fact, in Abyei.
That's Daniel Adekera, spokesperson of the UN mission in Abyei. He was speaking with me from Abyei town earlier today. A report to the UN Human Rights Council says October's military takeover in Sudan has dealt a heavy blow to the country's fledgling democracy, which might be difficult to reverse. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In her presentation of the report, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet deplored the stark reversal of progress toward democratic rule that had been made since former President Omar al-Bashir was ousted in April 2019. She said October's military coup once again has plunged Sudan into profound crisis. Since then, she said, a wide range of human rights violations have occurred with total impunity. She noted thousands of peaceful protesters have taken to the streets of Sudan to demand their rights.
At the same time, the repeated use of excessive force by security forces persists. Live ammunition and offensive weapons such as machine guns and shotguns have been used directly against protesters, and tear gas canisters have been fired as weapons at their heads and bodies, in clear breach of international law.
The report documents numerous violations perpetrated by security forces, including attacks on hospitals, medical facilities, and healthcare workers. It describes a pattern of arbitrary arrests and detention targeting prominent protest organizers and demonstrators. It says even children who have participated in protests have been killed, injured, and arrested. Bachelet expressed shock at allegations of dozens of rapes, gang rapes, and other forms of sexual violence against women, girls, and men. She warned attacks against journalists and human rights defenders were increasing, posing a severe threat to rights of freedom of expression and peaceful assembly.
The political crisis in Sudan has caused extremely worrying setbacks in human rights, It is urgent that the Sudanese authorities take credible steps towards reinstatement of a civilian administration with democracy and rule of law at its core, and to a path towards justice, equality, dignity, and peace for the Sudanese people.
Sudan's acting Minister of Justice, Mohamed Saeed Al-Hilo, said his government is committed to upholding the international and regional conventions on human rights ratified by Sudan, and that his country is committed to pursuing its transition to democracy. He said the government had begun investigating allegations of human rights violations. He added all political prisoners have been released, except for those awaiting trial for criminal proceedings. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ahead of the World Tuberculosis Day, March 24th, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis and Malaria is calling on governments to renew the fight against the respiratory illness, which kills over 1 million people each year. In South Africa, a hotspot for TB, a mobile screening team, is trying to make up for disruptions caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Linda Giptash reports from Johannesburg.
Despite being treatable and preventable, tuberculosis is a leading killer in South Africa. Testing for TB treatment has dropped dramatically during the coronavirus pandemic, with deadly consequences. Latoya Weiser's 32-year-old partner is among the fatalities.
His tongue, he was only saying that he's feeling bad. He didn't even taste the food. It's whereby I ask him, let's go to the clinic and test. It's whereby we find out that he's positive.
Although Weiser's partner was in treatment for 2 months, he succumbed to TB last August. Testing did ensure their infant son was put on preventative treatment. Both Weiser and the baby remain healthy, but she struggles with her loss.
I did wish, because if maybe we did find out sooner, maybe he would have still been alive.
Her experience is not unique. An estimated 1.8 billion people globally are infected with TB bacteria, disproportionately affecting those in poorer nations. Of those infected, roughly 10 million people get sick every year. The Global Fund says development of new TB treatments has long stagnated, and the onset of the coronavirus has made matters worse. Mohamed Yassin is a senior disease advisor on TB for the Global Fund.
We have seen more than 20% drop in the number of people who access diagnosis and treatment, and then the transmission will continue, and that will contribute to overall TB incidence and mortality. TB mortality for the first time increased to 1.5 million from the 1.4 million in 2019.
A new mobile clinic supported by the Global Fund aims to close the gap in TB testing. It's reaching people like Weiser, who find it hard to get to clinics. Ashley Mbakota is a radiographer for the van-based clinic.
If you don't know, like, surely you can't take care, you can't protect people next to you from something that you don't know that you have, even if you're not showing any symptoms. So we just check them. After screening, what we normally do, if we pick up that they have TB, we make sure that we trace the TB, like in families, friends, they all come and test.
Governments are also learning from mistakes made during the coronavirus pandemic to improve treatment for illnesses that were neglected. Dr. Ben Montwedi is a district clinical manager for HIV and TB programs in South Africa.
In hindsight, we should have, when we're investigating for COVID, also investigated for TB. But we have realized that we're rectifying our mistakes, we are rechanneling our efforts now to integrate COVID activities with primary health care activities, including TB services now.
To ensure efforts like this can have the greatest impact, the Global Fund is appealing to the international community for $18 billion. It says the funding will correct setbacks caused by the pandemic and move the world closer to eliminating diseases like tuberculosis. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state says she faces challenges from men in the state. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news? I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in the gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in the form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal state is expressing concern over the attitude of some men towards women leaders in South Sudan. The governor says some men in the country do not respect women leaders even when they hold top positions. Michael Atit reports for VOA from WOW.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in WOW town, Western Bahr al-Ghazal state governor Sara Kletu Hassan said some South Sudanese male leaders downplay the capabilities of their female counterparts. She says their attitude discourages many women from seeking top executive positions in the country. Governor Kletu says South Sudanese women have been working hard at all levels to ensure that basic services are delivered to citizens. She says it is a high time men allow women to serve the country in leadership positions.
The challenge that I see, and it is always a bias against women, is that men, they look at women as women they cannot do. They always assume they have a bias against women. Even when I was first appointed, others were saying, no, she will not even survive 2 weeks. She will run away because she cannot do it. But I have proved that we as women, we are strong.
At times, Kletu says she faces a number of obstacles when directing men that do not give her the respect she deserves in accordance with the provisions of the Revitalized Peace Agreement.
If this is a man on my seat, the respect that the man will get would be more. Because even we are within the government, I have to force myself in the system to say that I'm here, I'm the governor. I'm here in this state as a representative of the president. I have to be respected as a governor, but not to look at me as a woman.
Kletu says over the past 2 years, she has been able to break a lot of those biases, including the belief that women are not capable leaders. She calls on South Sudanese women to continue demanding their rights as citizens and be part of the political process taking place in the country.
We have to stand up for our rights. We have to, we are equal. We should not relegate ourselves in the back. And serving in the executives, I want to encourage women to also join political parties.
WOW resident Filberto Tibur says women can hold many different leadership positions, and history has proven that through their accomplishments. Tibur says men who stick to all cultural beliefs need to change their way of thinking and allow women to provide services to citizens.
All the men here in South Sudan or wherever, where they're grown up by women. So if women can grow you up to this moment, do you think she cannot do anything? She can do something. But you give them a chance and look at what they are going to do. Don't just say, no, you know, women cannot do anything. No, she's right. Women can do something. But we have to give them a chance.
WOW resident Sadiq Semeh agrees. He says women are born leaders and can accomplish much more than men do.
Women now, they have engaged in business. They're the one doing business, providing food in the family. Some women are the one paying children even in school. So women, they deserve that position. In those days, women have been oppressed. They are not allowed to go to school. They have been sent for an early marriage. But now, women are competing with men in education. When you go to the hospital, you find women working there. When you go to other ministry, you find women are there. So they deserve. They are capable of holding position of governor.
Governor Kileto says parties to the peace agreement are not fully implementing the provision that states 35% of the government positions should be allocated to women.
We have not completely met the 35%, but we are moving to that direction. If we look at the different parties, also we see that some of the parties have not met the 35%. So this is actually impacting the representation of women.
Governor Kileto was on the SPLM's IO list of three governors per the River Talais peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
The month of March has been set aside as Women's History Month for highlighting challenges facing women around the world. Some women in South Sudan say the effects of conflict coupled with economic hardship has forced them to take up responsibility of providing for their families. Some women in Juba say the high cost of living forced them to sell vegetables in the streets of the capital or take up jobs as maids in order to put food on the table for their families. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Juba resident Susie Pony, a mother of four children who sells food at Lokita Petrol Station in Juba, says she has been working at the station for several years now. Pony says sometimes she also sells biscuit at the custom taxi park to earn money for her family. Pony says for more than 8 years, her husband has been working in informal jobs where he earns about £2,000 a week. She says for several years, she has been the main breadwinner for her family.
So that I will be able to pay my children school fees and provide them food. My message to fellow women who are like me to try their best in their small businesses so that they can be able to put their children in school and also provide them food and pay their house rent.
Irene Aya heads the Juba-based Media Development Institute and is chairperson of the Female Journalist Network in South Sudan. Aya says with the country's economic crisis, the money men give their wives on a monthly basis isn't enough to meet their family's demands. She says women should take up work outside the home if it provides food for their children. In line with the theme of this year's International Women's Day, Aya says men and women should break with cultural bias and stop thinking in terms of male and female roles in society.
A woman who is working, at least, you know, she's able to do whatever she needs to do with her money. For example, for me, I don't have to ask my husband that I want to buy salt. I even pay children to school. I pay their school fees. Sometimes even I pay rent. So these are the kind of, you know, things that for us women we can do. We are advocating for gender equality.
During an event marking International Women's Day in Juba earlier this week, the country representatives of UN Women and the United Nations Development Programme, or UNDP, issued a joint message of solidarity with South Sudanese women. The two agencies call on people to keep in mind that many women all over South Sudan contribute to their communities but continue to lack support and recognition. The two UN agencies acknowledge that the gender bias exists and emphasize the need to break those biases in communities. The theme for this year's International Women's Day is Gender Equality Today for a Sustainable Tomorrow. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and the Africa Center for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with the song Tutu Party by Emerson.
Watch gonna yai, hey, before yai go fry. I dey watch like a bottom step and die. I see short skirts, hey, and mini skirts. Oh, who's one for dance with when his party go start? I want salet, yeah, I want ballet.
What you want?
Macale, and the party back me ale.
Overload,
not to your business, but in a party you come. Let me make an overload if we at you gonna do. Oh, 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 yeah, yeah. Deserves a body, every man deserves a lady. Come to party, oh no. Come jam, shake your body. Come show me, say you savvy. If you really ready, oh no. Before you even start the party, check for G-string or bikini. Now that man then ready, oh no. Come see tutu, so jam and so we na the party. But see well in the can it get already. With my boss lock up tea, Baba do re waiting to say. Tell me if you really done ready. Yeah, yeah, see yeah, yeah. They dance, they swing and they bounce it. No say, I never to the party. You see me they jump, they swing cool and cozy. No go say, I dip on tutu party. If you see me among sexy beautiful ladies. No go say, I dip on tutu party.
We've been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Fast forward everyone, yeah. All night long, yeah, yeah, yeah. Show me your motion, my woman. Show me your motion, my woman. Show me your motion, my woman. Show me.